This episode will be in English, not the usual French. I sat down and had a chat with a good colleague, Elaine Pruneau, over a cup of, what was it, chai with turmeric, very much inducing autophagy, both of us in a fasted state. Here's a brief introduction in French and then back to English. Oh, and I added fasting salts containing sodium, magnesium, and potassium, vital electrolytes that are often lacking when fasting, into the tea. Good morning, boys and girls. L'épisode qui suit sera entièrement en anglais, mais une version en français suivra. Aujourd'hui, on va parler avec un bon collègue à moi qui s'appelle Elaine Pruneau. Calimera, buenos dias, guten tag. Elle interprète les langues que je viens de vous saluer, dans les langues dans lesquelles je viens de vous saluer. Non seulement c'est une bonne interprète, mais she has a wonderful sense of wonder and a very, very strong curiosity. Over to you, Elaine. Oh, countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, take off.
Imagine you're in a spaceship approaching Earth. The Earth has a vibration, a hum, its own signature tune. But there's a melody that is louder than all the other music the planet produces. It's a song sung every day by millions of people. Can you guess what it is? The song is Happy Birthday to You. It's the sound of humanity marking time. How did I get into intermittent fasting? Well, it started really through just normal dieting. Until recently, I was calorie counting. But I discovered I needed a lot fewer than the standard 2,000 a day for an adult woman to avoid putting on weight. In fact, even at school, there were some kids that just never put on weight, and it was clear that the same thing didn't apply to everybody. Calories in, calories out was just not the answer. Then I started skipping breakfast. At lunchtime, I'd do sport and have a very light meal, protein-based, and I began to cut carbs and do what's now called keto. Of course, some people thought that was a bad idea. People would say, you'll get osteoporosis, it's harmful, you're starving yourself. You just need to eat healthily and the weight will drop off, which it never did. And of course, I was also ravenous by the time I got home. And then I discovered the Calorie Restriction Society. They have a website called Living the CR Way and a plan for becoming a super centenarian. Their theory is that your death can be postponed for many healthy, vibrant years, and it's all based on irrefutable lab animal evidence and a growing body of human lab evidence. And I realized that really having a slow metabolism was perhaps something of a gift. I'd been restricting calories to stop getting fat and had cursed my slow metabolism all my life, and then discovered that that very metabolism had led me to adopt a food lifestyle very early on that was likely to postpone disease. I also read some of the work of Walter Longo. He studied calorie restriction and the aging of the immune system at LA University.
He's a well-known expert in the field.
Yeah. And he discovered that fasting has a protective effect against cancer and also protects people from the side effects of chemotherapy. Cancer, of course, feeds on sugar. And yet, fasting is still to be adopted as a treatment for cancer patients. And when my own father was dying of lung cancer, his doctor gave him a stack of high-calorie drinking yogurt to keep his strength up. I now wonder whether that didn't just exacerbate his condition. So, when I discovered intermittent fasting, I'd been a calorie restrictor most of my life. and I'd already been doing just two meals a day, so I went down to one immediately, 22-2 regime, or what's known as OMAD. The insulin spike
theory... OMAD meaning one meal a day.
One meal a day, that's right, yeah. The insulin spike theory just made total sense. It was clear some people, and an increasing number as we age, do not need to eat three times a day. Mm-hmm. Some of us only need to eat once a day.
That's probably what cavemen did. They're eating two or three big meals a week, and then the rest of the time
even
snacking.
Even a week, yeah.
Snacking on nuts and berries.
In fact, do you even need to eat every day? That is something that I'm now starting to ask myself. Anyway, I've been on OMAD for almost 2 years now. I have my meal in the evening, and it's certainly not true that you need constant fuel for your brain to function. In fact, the opposite is true. OMAD grows new neurons, and I think people like us would know with a
Absolutely.
Profession which is...
Once you get used to it. After initial adjustment.
Yeah, because we have very high cognitive stress, and yet if we can function on 1 meal a day, then...
Yeah. Remember that time? There were three colleagues in the sun, you and me and Jean, and we were all three fasting.
Yes. There you go. As I said, calorie restriction involved being ravenous when I got home, but I discovered that when I started intermittent fasting, my hunger actually disappeared. And that was something of a surprise. And now I do also 48-hour fasts a year, and two 72-hour fasts a year.
I just finished a 30-hour fast just today.
Well done, great, mm-hmm. Yeah. And how did you find that the hunger went? Does it comes and
oh,
goes?
Oh, I only ate
it?
Because my wife. I met her at the train station, and we had our meal together. But I could have gone on.
I don't really think you're depriving yourself, because what you're doing is just delaying the pleasure of eating. And then on the hunger thing, after 36 hours, there's a drop in ghrelin, which is the hunger hormone, so you stop feeling hungry, and a rise in BDNF, new brain cells. After 48 hours of fasting, autophagy kicks in. What does autophagy do? It gets rid of damaged proteins, microbes, and basically it clears out all the old stuff that's not needed for replacement parts. There's a decrease in oxidative stress, which is caused by toxins in the environment. And autophagy also kills cancer cells. And if you go on to a 72-hour fast, then the whole immune system is renewed, according to a study done in 2004.
Mm-hmm. So. Actually, when you say autophagy kicks in at 48, autophagy kicks in gradually, or even if you do a 16-8
right.
or an 18-6, or because the glucagon, which is the stored sugar in the liver and the muscles, is slowly depleted. And when it's depleted, then the magic of autophagy starts.
And it starts, yeah. Mm-hmm.
When the digestive system finally gets a rest.
So, what differences did I notice then between calorie restriction and intermittent fasting itself? Well,
hunger, I think.
Yeah, hunger, I think, is the main difference. As I said, when I got home after a day of not really eating, and but I'd had something at lunchtime, small, but I'd had something, then I would get home really hungry. But stopping eating altogether at lunchtime, for some reason, I wasn't hungry when I got home. So that was one big difference. I hadn't really got any health problems, and I think that was probably due to the calorie restriction. But I did notice that when I went to the dentist, he was blown away. He said, I see you've been flossing a lot more, well done. Well, I hadn't, just once a day like before. And so he said, well, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. And I also lost 4 kilos, which I kept off.
So and what about body composition? Have you changed clothes size?
Yes, I've gone down a dress size.
Yeah, because that's the real, the number on the scales is just what gravity is putting, but muscle weighs more than fat.
Right, yeah.
So you can actually gain weight, but be much slimmer and stronger and fitter.
Right, yeah. Of course, there are some disadvantages to intermittent fasting. Things that I don't like. When I first started, I thought I'd die without a morning coffee, but I don't like it black, and milk spikes insulin, so I had to give up the coffee, and I switched it to the evening. It's just a habit. You can form new ones. Now my evening coffee is a huge night.
We're all different. I couldn't do that.
That's right, we're all different. And it doesn't keep me awake, fortunately. I also think one of the challenges of IF is getting all the nutrients you need, because you're only eating one meal. So I try to ensure that over 2 or 3 days I get all the vitamins I need, and I do supplement.
Do you find yourself making better nutritional choices?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I say it's about to have mushrooms, for example.
Stop eating like a little kid.
That's right. I do eat sugar still, just mainly in chocolate, a little at every meal to make life more living. But after all, Jeanne Calment ate 1 kilo of chocolate every week, and she lived to 122.
Yeah, well, it shows the good.
Yeah, I get cramps occasionally, and for that I take electrolytes. That's a new habit I've had to adopt as a result of intermittent fasting.
Okay.
Act. So I decided really to just experiment on myself and do everything in my power based on the most recent science and spiritual practices that I found out about to just extend a healthy lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I noticed was that there were certain lifetime events where people's health and appearance seemed to go downhill.
Yeah.
Such as retirement or big birthdays.
Death of a spouse,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wondered about the influence of the mind on physical health, and wondered whether it wasn't the event rather than the accumulation of years that was causing the decline. For example, with big birthdays, the subconscious has a picture of what 50 is or of what 80 is. It's the sum of all the people you've ever known or seen at that age.
Well, I'm 64, and I certainly don't relate to the When I'm 64 song of the Beatles. I'm not that grandpa
For example, for them, when they made that song, they were thinking that 64... Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
But what if it wasn't old? What if 80 wasn't synonymous with ill health and Alzheimer's?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's the effect of language as well. I mean, we use phrases such as, I'm no spring chicken, I'm past my prime, old age isn't for sissies, I'm getting on a bit, I've got 1 foot in the grave, I'm past my own sell-by date, the wrong side of 50, long in the tooth, I'm having a senior moment. These are all insidious messages that go directly to our subconscious.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Some people say, as they're getting older, I get so tired these days. But I've noticed that my sons, who are in their 20s, they say exactly the same thing. But of course, they don't put it down to age. They just think they've had a bad day. So I try to do the same thing.
Didn't sleep well,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another step on my journey, where I was thinking that thoughts and emotions can have an effect on your body, on the physical body. And if you think thoughts can't affect your body, think about what happens when you blush, for example.
Oh, yeah.
So controlling or adjusting your emotions and your thoughts is, for me at least, crucial to health and very important for how you age. And that's why I've made meditation an important part of my life. And also in practical ways, when I hear on the radio, for example, some listeners may find this disturbing, I'm one of those who switch off. I don't want the toxic emotions of despair, fear, guilt, shame, rage careering through my body when they're not even my own. I don't want that cascade of cortisol. I don't want an overload of stress hormones, because those hormones have been linked to so many health problems, including heart disease, high blood pressure, weakened immune function. It's bad for older brains.
But you can always filter out the audio of the news and choose your news source, because many people do present positive news.
That's a very good idea. Mm-hmm. Just listen to positive news, because it's...
Or comedians talking about the news is a great way to...
To keep up to date, well...
And at the same time, venting, informing yourself, and laughing.
Exactly, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Laughter being an excellent therapy as well. Because that extra cortisol, if it gets into your system over the years, it can damage the hippocampus, and that's a part of the brain that's very important for storing and retrieving memories.
Mm.
Of course, some people might think that thoughts becoming things, as it were, that's a bit out there. It's a bit woo-woo. But, you know, the science is out there too. I could give you the example of the...
Some people say the Earth isn't flat.
But listen to this. Have you heard of the power pose experiment?
I heard you tell me about it.
Right, well... Amy Cuddy is a researcher at Harvard University. She's done a TED talk about the power pose experiment.
Mm.
What that's about is the fact that powerful leaders tend to have higher levels of testosterone and lower levels of cortisol. She compared the effect of adopting high power body language with the effect of purposely adopting lower power body language using saliva tests. What's a high power body pose? Well, that would be your hands on your hips, sitting back with your hands behind your head, leaning forward with your hands, with your arms straight on the table as if you're addressing a meeting. Lower power body language would be sitting with your hands between your knees, your arms crossed on the table, looking down, sitting with your arms crossed.
That can also be an aggressive stance.
It can
be defiant.
It can.
Standing with your arms crossed or with your chest.
So that would be a high power version.
Yeah. Aggressive.
What she found was, in the saliva tests, that simply adopting a high power pose increased testosterone by 20% and decreased cortisol levels by 25%.
In both men and women?
In both men and women.
Yeah.
In both men and women.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's perhaps because of the effect of language, thoughts and emotion on the physical body, it might be an idea not to go too public about how old you actually are, not to publicize your age too much, because you don't want your own subconscious to hear it and spare. Of course, unfortunately, it's a fact of life. Our date of birth is an official document, which is why I was so intrigued to hear the case of the Dutchman Emile Rattleband. Have you heard
of him?
That's
a funny case, yes, on the BBC.
That's right. 69-year-old, he wanted to be 49. And his argument was, we live in a time when you can change your name and change your gender. Why can't I decide my own age? He did mention success on Tinder as a motivation, as well as getting a mortgage.
A very powerful motivation, yes.
The courts rejected his case, of course. They said that granting the request would cause all kinds of legal problems by effectively erasing 20 years of events. They said, what would happen to qualifications obtained in that time or a driving license issued?
Seniority at work.
Yeah, that's true. Or a marriage contracted, for example. But I agreed with the sentiment behind it. If my ID card stated an age 20 years younger than my chronological age, how would that affect my health? How would it affect my body? I mean, we all expect to need reading glasses in our 40s and 50s, but perhaps if we don't accept that, we might not. What if we thought our eyesight would actually improve over time?
Uh-huh. Well, I went to the neurologist recently for a medical problem I had, and she was reading my file and hadn't looked at me yet the first time I went in, and she said, mais je vois quand même que vous avez 64 ans. And she looked at me. Vous êtes bien, monsieur Hübner? And I thought that was the best compliment I've ever heard in my life.
Great. So she thought that you...
She thought that...
You must be a lot younger.
I did not look like a 64-year-old. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, one of the most fascinating studies on the effect of mindset on aging was done by Dr. Ellen Langer. She's a psychologist at Harvard. She did the counterclockwise study in 1979, and the aim was to look at what effects turning back the clock psychologically would have on people's physiological state.
Uh-huh.
Her idea was to recreate the world of 1959 and ask subjects to live as though it were 20 years earlier. The theory being tested was, if we put the mind back 20 years, would the body reflect that change? She decided on certain markers to test the physical health or the effect on the subjects, vision, hearing and dexterity. And she gave the subjects IQ tests before the study took place and also took before and after photographs. So Dr. Langer chose a group of men in their 70s and 80s and asked them to spend a week at a country retreat to talk about the past.
Mm-hmm.
She divided the group into the control group and the experimental group. Now, the control group's task was to reminisce about 1959 and write a short piece about themselves in the past tense, write about what they'd achieved during their lives, write a CV as if it was in the past, and so on and so forth. But for the experimental group, all the conversations about 1959 had to be in the present. And their CV had to be about what they were doing in 1959, but as if it were now.
Uh-huh.
They were asked to discuss politics, sport, what's on the TV, as if it were happening then, but only discuss what was actually going on in 1959. Dr. Langer surrounded them with newspapers from 1959. In fact, the environment she created mimicked 1959 in every way, and no one was allowed to discuss anything that happened after 1959. She said to the men, "Let yourself be who you were in 1959." So they discussed the launch of the first US satellite, Explorer 1, Castro's advance into Havana. They watched Sergeant Bilko and Ed Sullivan on a black and white television, discussed Ian Fleming's new book, Goldfinger, and watched films such as Some Like It Hot, Ben-Hur. At the end of just 1 week, she compared the control group to the experimental group. And the experimental group was found to have improved hearing, improved strength of grip. They were able to carry their own luggage out, for example, whereas they needed help when they arrived. Their height had increased. Their gait was faster.
Well, how did their height increase? That's just...
I don't know. Maybe they were just holding themselves.
Yeah, posture.
Posture, yeah.
Yeah. Less shrinkage.
Yeah. Less feeling weighed down by worries.
I know the Japanese, they have an expression about aging being shrinking.
Right. Mm-hmm. Their memory tests were better. Uh-huh. They had less pain from arthritis. They did better on the IQ tests. And when they asked external people to judge their age in the photos, in the before and after photos, they came out younger in the after photos. Mm-hmm. So, in conclusion, it does seem that the mind has enormous control over the body.
Mm-hmm. Now, aging is, after all, a natural process. All animals in the animal kingdom, and even plants, age. So, what do you have to say about that?
Well, of course, that's true. We're part of nature, and nature follows its cycle of birth, aging, and death. But animals and plants don't have conscious control over their destiny and their bodies.
Right, yeah.
We do. We have agency. In fact, there's another researcher called Dr. Bruce Lipton, who's a scientist and a medical school professor, and he's written about the placebo effect. Mm-hmm. He talks in one of his books about a study done on evaluating surgery for patients with knee pain, which was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. So a study was done to test which part of the surgery was giving the patients relief. One group got actual surgery, but another group got fake surgery.
Is that even ethical?
Yeah, you do wonder. But wait till I tell you what happened. The fake surgery included anaesthetic, standard incisions, stitches, the whole shebang, and both groups were given post-operative exercise programs. Now, you would think that there'd be no placebo effect with surgery, but the results were shocking. The real surgery group improved, as you would expect, but so did the placebo group. In fact, to such an extent that it hit the news, and the television showed footage of the placebo group doing things they couldn't do before their fake surgery, such as playing sports, running after their grandchildren, and so on. And the placebo group didn't find out for 2 years that they'd actually had fake surgery.
Wow.
So the mind really can work miracles. Think of the money that could be saved by harnessing the placebo effect. And Dr. Lipton says that really, we should be doing research into the placebo effect.
Well, we've all experienced the placebo effect when our moms put the Band-Aid on our scratched knee when we were kids.
And
all of a sudden it felt better.
Felt better.
And a little kiss.
Yeah, but of course the pharmaceutical industry is unlikely to pay for more research. On the flip side, there's also the nocebo effect. Have you heard of that?
No.
Well, the nocebo effect is this. If a doctor or another authority figure tells you that you have 6 months to live, you're not likely to be around much longer. Which is why I think it's better not to be tested for hereditary disease.
Well, can I tell you the story about the Greek man? The Greek migrant, he went to the States for a living. And at age 35, he was diagnosed by his doctor with terminal cancer and was given 2 to 3 years to live. And several other doctors confirmed that. Diagnosis. So he returned to his native little village on an island in Greece, one of the blue zones, where people live to be 100 typically, and
Ikaria,
nobody's quite.
I think it was.
Huh?
Ikaria.
Maybe. There's also in Sardinia, Italy, on the island of Hokkaido in Japan.
That's right, yeah.
And anyway, the BBC reporter went 60 years later, I think it was 50 years later, to check up on him and, you know, to ask how he was doing. And when she arrived in the village, she was told, oh, he's up, he's on top of that ladder picking olives in the tree at the age of 107 or something like that. I can't recall. And so he comes down and she says, my, this is quite impressive. Did you ever get in touch with those doctors that told you way back when? And he said, yes, I tried, but they were all dead.
Yeah, and in a case like that, it's the placebo effect in a way, but I think it was because he was surrounded by his old friends.
Clearly, connection.
Clearly, social.
Healthy eating, no pollution.
Yeah.
Not overeating.
Yeah.
Healthy Mediterranean diet.
Doing exercise, clearly.
Yeah. Staying active. Yeah. And feeling important, part of the community.
Feeling important. So again, feelings and emotions being absolutely crucial for physical health.
In fact, the inhabitants on the island of Hokkaido in Japan claim that one of the causes of death amongst their population is heart attack while making love. That may just be boasting, I don't know. Okay, do you have any personal experiences of how the brain and the body can do miraculous things?
I do. I do have something from my own life. I fell off a ladder once, pruning a tree. It hit my head on the wall when I reached the ground, knocked myself out. When I came to, I couldn't walk. I was single with small children, no family around to help, self-employed, needed to work. So I pulled myself into the house by my arms, dragging my injured leg along the ground behind me. I slithered past my toddlers who were playing on the floor and pulled myself up onto the sofa.
Wow.
When I looked, my lower leg had turned black and was swollen. I just thought, oh no. I closed my eyes and said, I cannot be incapacitated. There's no one to help me or care for the kids. I am therefore not injured. I do not accept this accident. So I am now healed. And I pictured a light going into my leg. And when I opened my eyes, the bruising had vanished and the swelling had completely gone in less than a minute. I got up, tested my leg, I walked around, no pain, nothing. So that was my miracle.
Wow. That leads me to make two comments. First of all, the reports of mothers being able to suddenly find the strength to pick up a tire lorry to get the tire off of their child's leg.
Yeah. Superhuman strength in an emergency. This for me was an emergency.
The body's just addressing all of its resources towards one single very important urgent task.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the other thing is that I think that your perception of time may be flawed. What you perceived, for example, when I got my colonoscopy, I remember various people, I couldn't see, but I could hear various people getting busy in the laboratory, commenting on their upcoming vacations, etc., etc. And then I heard the anesthesiologist whisper in my ear, "Bonne nuit, au revoir." And then I started to feel a tingling around, where they were going to do the colonoscopy. And I said, wait, don't start yet, I'm not asleep yet. And they said, on a déjà fini. I had no experience of that time.
You were completely out. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think the same thing may have happened to you.
It's possible. Who knows?
Yeah.
All I know that was that my leg was completely, it was black and swollen. And then when I opened my eyes, it wasn't anymore. And I could walk, whereas before I couldn't.
Yeah.
And I knew I had to be able to look after those babies.
Yeah.
And there was nobody else to do that.
And
so it was an emergency.
Do they remember that?
No, they were too small. They were still playing on the floor when I opened my eyes. They don't remember that at all. They were toddlers, which is why it was an emergency.
Huh. Well, I remember on the BBC there was a story of a mother who passed out, and the child of 4 or 5 picked up her phone, put her thumb on it to open the phone as she had seen her mother do, and phoned 911.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. So that child's brain also thought,
and
this
do you
is
know
a
where
survival.
You are? I'm at my mommy's house, but they geolocated and
fantastic.
Okay, well, Elaine, that's been great talking to you. Yeah, lots of common ground with things we have of interest, and we've been researching similar areas as well. And it's good to hear confirmation of what is pretty much a niche subject for the time being. But I suspect there's going to be a lot of future in aging, and you know, doctors putting patients with Alzheimer's on fasts, people being put on, well, even epilepsy in children. Originally, they were told to fast and to go on a keto diet to reduce their fits of epilepsy.
Yeah,
back in the 1920s.
Yeah.
And you know, it's come full circle now.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, I know you have to run. You're off to the pool, if I'm not mistaken. Straight from work, interview, and then off to the pool. So, bye-bye.
Bye.
Enjoy the sun.
Thank you.
Well, that was great. It was even better than yesterday.
Yeah. Well, it was more structured because you knew what was coming.
Yeah. You know, I think when I finally do the English version, it's going to be really a killer because I have the experience now of how to do it.
Yeah.
And I have all of the script in my head, and it's going to be a piece of cake.
When you do more interviews with other people,
I'm going to redo all of these episodes in English and in Esperanto, in German, in French, Dutch, definitely.
You're going to you want to speak English over an interviewee who's speaking another language. This is nice.
No, I'm going to produce the same podcast in all those different languages in parallel.
This one?
Mm. Oh, no, well, all the episodes, all 60.
Oh, right.
Because yours is number 60. I've created.
You've done 60 already. Wow.
I've done 60. Did 61 yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you do yesterday then?
Let me show you.
What time is it? Let's have a look.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'm going to have to type in the text.
Never mind.
Oh, could I have a copy of the text? Or take a picture of it. I'll take a picture of it.
It's just sort of random
because
notes.
I could put the notes in the show notes.
So, how do I really get interested in longevity?
Mm-hmm.
I think
for quite some time now, really.
Yeah, ever since I was a teenager. Because back in the 1970s, we were slathering on Bergasol with its tanning activator, and there was no real talk about the dangers.
I got sunburned every summer.
And then one day in a woman's magazine on Beauty Pages, I saw a small insert. And it said, then it's been a sort of lifelong experiment to myself. It's obviously going to be a very long experiment. Well, I hope it is.
Let's hope so.
And we'll
that's
see.
The whole point.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see. We'll see whether what I'm doing works. So I'm a work in progress. So after that, I got interested in the influence of the mind on the body. I noticed, for example, that some people's health and appearance appeared to change after certain events in their life. For example, retirement.
Absolutely.
Or big birthdays. And I wondered whether it wasn't the event rather than the accumulation of years that was actually causing the decline.
People tell themselves stories.
Yeah, a big birthday, for example. We all have a subconscious picture of what 50 is and what 80 is. It's the sum of all the people you've ever known or seen at that age. But what if 80 wasn't synonymous with ill health and Alzheimer's? There's also the effect of language. We use phrases such as, I'm no spring chicken, I'm past my prime. Old age isn't for sissies, I'm getting on a bit. Got one foot in the grave, I'm past my own cell by day. Can't complain, the wrong side of 50, I'm long in the tooth, I'm having a senior moment. These are all insidious messages, but they go directly to our subconscious. So if you think thoughts can't affect your body, think about what happens when you blush. So I came to believe that adjusting your thoughts and emotions is crucial to your health and how you age, and meditation became an important part of my life. When you hear on the radio, some viewers may, or some listeners may find this disturbing, I'm one of the people who switches off. I don't want toxic emotions of despair, guilt, shame, rage careering through my body when they're not even my own. I don't want the cascade of cortisol, An overload of stress hormones has been linked to many health problems like heart disease, weakened immune function, and it's very bad for older brains. And extra cortisol over the years can damage the hippocampus, which is a part of the brain that's crucial for storing and retrieving memories. I avoid violent films for the same reason. Some people might think it's a bit out there, it's a bit woo-woo, but the science is also out there. For example, powerful leaders tend to have higher levels of testosterone and lower levels of cortisol.
That's not surprising.
There's a lady called Amy Cuddy, who's a researcher at Harvard, and she talks about the power pose experiment. She's got a TED talk about it if you want to look it up.
Oh, Jen Stevens is one of those.
Really? Yeah. Anyway, Amy Cuddy compared the effect of high-powered body language with compared to low-powered body language using a saliva test. What's high-powered body language? It would be standing with your hands on your hips, sitting back with your hands behind your head, sitting with your arms straight on the table, leaning forward, addressing a meeting, for example. What would be low-power? Holding your hands between your knees, your arms crossed on the table looking down, or sitting with your arms crossed. So what the researchers did was they took a sample of saliva after each of these poses had been adopted by the group being studied, and they discovered that high power poses increased testosterone by 20% and decrease cortisol levels by 25%, just through body language.
Yeah.
I also try to avoid stating my age, and that's because I don't want my subconscious to hear it because of the archetypes that we all have in our mind of what that age is. Unfortunately, it's a fact of life that our date of birth is on official documents.
Yeah.
And that's why I was intrigued to hear about the case of the a Dutchman called Emile Ratterblad.
That's right. He was on the BBC.
Him.
Yes, I have. A court case even.
Exactly. He was 69 and he wanted to be 49. And he said, we live in a time when you can change your name and your gender. Why can't I decide my own age? He did mention success on Tinder as a motivation, as well as getting a mortgage. But of course, the courts rejected his case because they said that granting it would cause all kinds of legal problems by effectively erasing 20 years of events. What would happen to qualifications obtained in that time, or driving license issued, or a marriage? But I agree with his sentiment. If my ID card stated an age 20 years younger than my chronological age, how would this affect my body and my health? We all expect to need reading glasses in our 40s and 50s, but perhaps if we don't accept that, we might not. What if we thought our eyesight would improve over time? One of the most fascinating studies I've ever read on the effect of mindset on aging was done by Dr. Ellen Langer, who's a psychologist at Harvard. She did the counterclockwise study in 1979, and the idea was to look at what effects turning back the clock psychologically would have on people's physiological state. So her idea was to recreate the world of 1959 and to ask subjects to live as though it were 20 years earlier. The theory being tested was, if we put the mind back 20 years, would the body reflect that change? To do an experiment, we need markers to test. And an interesting fact is there are no actual markers for old age. However, Dr. Langer decided on vision, hearing, and dexterity, strength. She gave the subjects IQ tests, and she took before and after photos. And she got together a group of men in their 70s and 80s who spent a week at a country retreat to talk about the past. She divided them into a control group and an experimental group. The task of the control group was to reminisce about 1959 and to write a short piece about themselves in the past tense, what they had done, what they had achieved, and so on in their lives. For the experimental group, all conversations about 1959 had to be in the present. And their short piece was also about what they were doing in 1959, as if it were now. They would also be asked to discuss sport and politics as if it were happening then. Yeah. Dr. Langer surrounded
they even have radio and television recordings?
That's what I'm going to come on to.
Oh, yeah.
They discussed the launch of the first U.S. satellite, Explorer 1, Castro's advance into Havana. They watched Sergeant Bilko and Ed Sullivan on black and white television. They discussed Ian Fleming's new book, Goldfinger. And they watched films such as Some Like It Hot and Ben-Hur. In other words, they created an environment which mimicked 1959 in every way, and no one could discuss anything that happened after 1959. Dr. Langer said to the men, let yourself be who you were in 1959. At the end of the week, the experimental group were compared to the control group, and the experimental group was found to have improved hearing, improved strength and grip. They were able to carry their own luggage out when they needed help. Even their height had increased, their gait was better, they scored better on the IQ and the memory tests, their arthritis had decreased, and when they asked external people to judge their age in the before and after photos, the ages came out
young. Yeah, that's best.
So the conclusion is that the mind does have enormous control over the body. Of course, you might say, well, everyone ages, the whole of nature ages, animals age, plants age. And they do. Nature follows its cycle of birth, aging, and death, and of course we're part of that. But animals and plants don't have conscious control over their destiny. We do. We have agency.
Or even where they are in most cases.
Dr. Bruce Lipton is a research scientist and a medical school professor who's written about the placebo effect. And he talks about a study done on evaluating surgery for patients with knee pain, which was published in the New England Journal of Medicines. And he did a study to test which part of the surgery was giving the patients relief. He divided the patients into two groups again, and one group got actual knee surgery, and another group got fake knee surgery. And the fake surgery included anesthetic, standard incisions, and stitches. Both groups were given post-operative exercise programs. Now, you'd think there'd be no placebo effect with surgery, but results were shocking. The real surgery group improved as you'd expect, but so did the placebo group. In fact, to such an extent, it hit the news, and there was TV footage shown of the placebo group doing things they couldn't do before their fake surgery.
Remember the placebo effect of that band-aid your mum put on your little scratch when you fell as a kid?
Exactly the same.
Yeah, magic. It works on kids.
The placebo effect, the group, didn't find out for 2 years they'd had fake surgery. So the mind really can work miracles. And in fact, Dr. Lipton says that the placebo effect shouldn't just be discounted as just the placebo effect. It should be actively studied right now by research. You could save huge amounts of money by harnessing the placebo effect, although the pharmaceutical industry is probably unlikely to pay for that kind of research. But on the flip side, of course, there's also the nocebo effect. You know that?
Never heard of that.
The nocebo effect is... An example would be if a doctor or some kind of an authority figure tells you have 6 months to live, you're likely not to be around much longer. So it's better not to be tested for hereditary disease, in my view.
Well, just on the, there was a report on the BBC, I'm going to tell a little story, fascinating. It was a Greek man who emigrated as a young man to the US. And at age 35, he was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and several doctors gave him only 2 to 3 years left to live. So he went back to his little village on an island, and 50, 60 years later, this BBC journalist goes to the village because he lives in one of these blue zones where people live to be 100 typically, and there are some in Japan, Hokkaido, there Sardinia, and Greece, there are several. And when she went to look for him, the villager said, oh, he's out, he's on top of the ladder of that olive tree picking olives. And he came down, and the journalist said, well, this is quite amazing. Have you ever tried to get in touch with those doctors who told you you had very little to live? And he said, yes, I did try, but they were all dead.
I think what was different in his case was that he was surrounded by friends. And it was social.
Networking. And also the healthy diet. Not overeating.
And less stress.
Yeah.
And also the doctors not being around to tell him that he was going to die.
Okay. Okay, well, what personal experience of the mind have you had doing amazing things?
Well, I do have one personal miracle that happened to me, to make a bit more clear. I fell off a ladder once for a retreat. I hit my head on the wall when I reached the ground and I knocked myself out. When I came to, I couldn't walk. I was single, with three small children. I had no family to help, self-employed, and I needed to work. So there I was in the garden, on the ground, concussion, couldn't walk. I pulled myself into the house by my arms. I was dragging my injured leg along the ground behind me. I slithered past my toddlers who were playing on the floor, and I pulled myself up onto the sofa. When I looked, my lower leg had turned black and was swollen. So I closed my eyes and I said, I cannot be incapacitated. There is no one to help me. There is no one to care for the kids. I am therefore not injured. I do not accept this accident. So I am now healed. So what I did was I pictured light going into my legs and healing any break, although I didn't say the word break to myself. I didn't want that to go into my subconscious. And I lay there for a while, and then I said to myself, when I open my eyes, everything will be fine. I opened my eyes, and the bruising had vanished. The swelling had gone. In less than a minute, I got up and walked around, and there was no pain. There was nothing.
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all. In less than a minute.
Or it might have been longer. That might have been your perception.
Maybe I was in a different time zone or universe,
but there's a good chance.
It was as if it was an emergency.
Yeah, yeah.
It was an emergency, and I just couldn't be injured.
Yeah. I've heard those stories of mothers picking up trucks to get their sons or their child's legs under the tires.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
The mind and the body are connected, and together they can do amazing things.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Elaine. Fantastic. We really have a lot of thinking in common, and we've been doing some common research. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.